Okay, let's continue. So what we were discussing is this idea, this combination of guf and neshama, and the idea that we left off last week was the requirement of the way that the two interact is that the neshama is going to infuse the mitzvahs that we do, even the mitzvahs that we do with our bodies, become a different character, a different type of mitzvah when it is done in such a manner. You can have a empty body mitzvah, you can put on your tefillin, you could wear your tzitzis, and you could do all of those, welcome, come on in. You can do all those mitzvahs, even though they are body mitzvahs that are done with the body, but if they're not infused with the lev, they're not infused with the neshama, they're not infused with the thought behind them, they remain there in that empty sphere. And that the goal is to take the connection that we have from the inside, the requirements of the lev, of the neshama, and infuse then the physical mitzvahs that we do with that kedusha as well. I don't know if anyone had a chance to actually work on that in terms of thinking about the tefillin that you're putting on in the morning, or the tzitzis, that it should be a different type of mitzvah than it was beforehand. That was the idea.
I have a question. Let's say, would it be better, instead of spending the whole hour in davening, whatever it is, and then instead focusing, on a particular part of the davening with your tefillin on, and being sure that you're able to, have that kavanah for those particular, Shemoneh Esrei or something, and then rather than
doing the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I'll regal achas. I'm sure the question is more complex than that. This is what we mentioned last week, that the first step is doing the things we need to do. That's covering the ground. And then we start going deeper and making sure that the things that we're doing actually have meaning, and that we connect them on a different way than actually just doing them. So I would imagine the first thing is make sure you do the things you do, you have to say the things that you're required to say, and then it's a matter of making sure that you actually are thinking for a few minutes as you're going through your Shemoneh Esrei. But that's where we left off, and we will... I want to conclude his introduction with one last vort that he has, and then we'll get into the first of his, as we begin to work on this, actually taking the insight and connecting it with that which is going on in the world around us. So he has, I'm going to take Dalet and Hay and just try to speak most of it outside, as opposed to working it through inside. He speaks about the difference between the first base of Mikdash and the second base of Mikdash. Now, there were Jewish people who were not perfect, believe it or not, during the times both of the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. Even though the Beis HaMikdash was there, there were still Jews who constantly fell short. You open up the Tanakh, and you can read throughout all the stories, and there were constantly issues that the Jewish people were falling short. What he points out, and I used to have a Rebbe in Israel when I was there, he used to always point this out as well, the same idea. There was one sin which you never find by the first Beis HaMikdash. As long as the first Beis HaMikdash stood, you never find the following concept in all of Tanakh. And that is the concept of what we would call kfira, a person denying God. Today we live in a world where a person can live their entire life, Jew, non-Jew, either way, and never acknowledge the existence of God. I'm sure we all know people like that. We've ourselves questioned at times, is there, isn't there? No, I do believe. It's a discussion that we have. There are books about it. There is a God, there isn't a God. We can prove it, we can prove there isn't. It's on the table for discussion in the world that we live in. In the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, that was simply not a discussion.
God was declared dead 3 miles from here.
Right, so it's not even a discussion anymore. It's over. Right, case closed. It's a done deal. So that's what exists today. But in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, there was not a discussion. Why was it not a discussion when the first Beis HaMikdash stood?
Daily miracles.
There he was. You don't believe it? Come. Come. Take you by the hand. I'll bring you to Yerushalayim, and you'll see him. You will actually perceive and experience the concept of the Creator in a way that we have no connection to. We don't really even understand exactly what it means that you can go and experience the Ribono Shel Olam. But that's what it was like in the first Beis HaMikdash. So if you look through Tanakh, you will find people with Avodah Zarah, there'll be idol worship because you can serve, they would tinker with the right type of service, and they would misdirect it. You'll find Gilui Arayos, you'll find illicit relationships, you'll find all sorts of things. But you will not find someone who gets up and says, there's no such thing as a creator. There's no God, there's a code. It just doesn't exist. You get to the times of the Gemara, the Talmud, the Tanoim, period of the second Beis HaMikdash, even before that one, there already you can have such a thing. Because in the second Beis HaMikdash, you have the Tzedukim, people who deny the oral law, people who deny this. You got into all sorts of different, a different time period, because that presence of Hashem wasn't revealed in the second Beis HaMikdash like it was in the first. And so there was a new level of avera of sin that could take place, but it changed from the first to the second. So Revolta takes this idea and explains the following Gemara. The Gemara discusses a well-known Gemara, it's quoted all the time in the around Tisha B'Av and others, why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed? And the Gemara asks this question by both Bote Mikdash. Why was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Why was the second Beis HaMikdash destroyed? So, just to read this part inside, this is on paragraph Hey, if you want to just follow it inside, it's on page Tez Zion. If you want to read it in your little sheet, I think it's the fourth page. It's three lines down in the beginning of Os Hey. Mikdash Rishon Mipnei Machara. So the Gemara asks, why was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? So the Gemara answers, there were three cardinal sins which the Jewish people violated during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash: Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichos Damim. Idol worship, illicit relationships, murder. That was the problem of the first Beis HaMikdash. They were doing the big cardinal three sins, and that's what they were doing. Asks the Gemara of Al Mikdash Sheni Shonu Bikiyin Bo Shoyu Oskin Batzer V'Mitzvos U'V'Gemilas Chasad. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara asks, I don't understand. The first one we know, look at them. Murderers, idolaters, illicit relationships, adultery, all that stuff is going on in the first Beis HaMikdash. But the second, the Gemara says, they were learned people. They were Osek in Torah, they were doing mitzvos, Gemilas Chasadim, Mipnei Ma. So why was the Beis HaMikdash destroyed if they were involved in all of these things, the Gemara asks. Answers the Gemara, B'tnei Shehaisa Bo Sinos Chinam. Because what they did have was baseless hatred of other Jews. So yes, in their outward appearances, they were doing great things. There was chesed all over the place. There were gemachs. They were doing the mitzvahs. They were learning Torah. There were kailul, and people were sitting and learning. But there was a sinus chinam which rested amongst the Jewish people. This is, by the way, the fact that the Beis HaMikdash has not been rebuilt is because we clearly have not yet remedied the problem for why it was destroyed. And it wasn't destroyed because of a lack of Torah, it wasn't destroyed because of a lack of mitzvahs, and it wasn't destroyed because of a lack of chesed. It was destroyed because of a lack of interpersonal relationships, Jew amongst Jew, a sinus chinam. And until the fact that it has not yet been rebuilt is a testament to the fact that we're still suffering from that. That's just a parenthetical comment. That's what the Gemara says. It was. That's why it was destroyed. Continues the Gemara. Rabbi Yosi v'Elazar da'amri shavayu rishonim shenizgala avonam nizgala kitzam. The first sins of the Beis HaMikdash. What were the first sins? Everybody knew what it was. It was open and revealed sins: murder, idolatry, and adultery. They were. It was Nizgal, and I'll refer back to the first shmuz that we had, in which Revolta was establishing the difference between an avoda gluya and an avoda tzvuna, a hidden service, a hidden avoda, and a revealed avoda. Part of our avoda to Hashem is revealed. I could see you wearing tzitzis, I could see you putting on tefillin, I could see you visiting the sick, and then part of it is hidden. I can't see whether or not you're doing it. I don't know what's really going on inside your mind, inside your heart. So the Gemara says, the first Beis HaMikdash, which their sin was revealed, it was open, it was nizgala, avodah zarah, shvichos damim, murder, idolatry, adultery. So it was also revealed how long it would be. Chazal learned out that it was revealed to the Nevi'im, it was going to be 70 years, and after 70 years they were going to go back. Many of the Mefarshim point out, that's why Ahasuerus made this whole big feast. He miscalculated when the 70 years would be. He thought it was over, and Hashem had abandoned the Jewish people. But there was a number out there. It was revealed how long the exile would be, because it was revealed what their sin was. Achronim, however, the second Beis HaMikdash, Shalonisgala Avonam, Lonizgala Kitzem. It was not revealed what their avon, what their sin was. The duration of the exile, when the end will be, is also not revealed. And Revolva points out as follows. The Bayis Sheni was destroyed because their outer world or their inner world was destroyed. Was it their what they did with their bodies or what they had inside their minds? Says Revolva, the second Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't an outward thing. It wasn't with their avoda gluya. Look, they're doing chasad. They're learning Torah. They're doing mitzvahs. Anyone who would look at another Jew would see a pious individual. They would see somebody who's doing all the right things. But why was it destroyed? because their lev was destroyed, their insides, their neshama, the avodat svuna, the hidden, it was sinna. There was a hatred that boiled under. You couldn't see it, something which wasn't there revealed, but it was there underlying that which was going on. As opposed to the first Beis HaMikdash, which had the exact opposite impact. The first Beis HaMikdash was outwardly, it was destroyed with murder, idolatry, and adultery. The first Beis HaMikdash, when Hashem's presence was openly revealed, that inner connection was there. What was destroyed was their outward appearance. Second Beis HaMikdash, where what was destroyed, where they didn't have an outward understanding of Hashem, that was then hidden, and what was destroyed was the inner world of the Jewish people. And he concludes this paragraph, what he has there in, I guess it's italics in the Hebrew print, Midos Ro'os, Hein Hein Churbon Olamu Hapnimi Shel Ha'adam. It's the Midos Ro'os, the improper traits of a person. The Sinas Chinam is represented by the Sinas Chinam, which is the Shorish, the root of all of that, is the destruction of the Olam Hapnimi of the person, when their inner worlds were destroyed. When the Jewish people's inner world was destroyed, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And it's going to require, he writes, therefore, to rebuild the inner world. It's not the Torah, the Mitzvahs, or the Gemilas Chasid that was lacking. That wasn't the problem. The outward appearances were all there. It was the Olam HaPnimi, it was that inner world. There was no connection to that, as he writes, is represented by Sinas Chinam. The Olam HaChitzoni was fine. It was the Olam HaPnimi, the inner world, which was destroyed. And it's therefore going to require to rebuild the Olam HaPnimi, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, not in doing more acts of chesed, which of course we need to do, and in the Torah and the mitzvahs, but it's in making that the type of acts and the types of chesed and the type of Torah which is filled with an olam ha'pnimi as well, not just a shell of an act just on the external. And that's what he writes as his introduction to the work that he plans on doing throughout his sefer. Alright, we'll leave it at that as far as his introduction goes and actually begin the work. Okay, so what I've done is chosen a couple of various sections from the second chelak, and we'll work through together a little vav. Okay, this is called, as you see, Hislamdus.
Is it believed that when Mashiach comes is when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt or not?
No, I've heard much worse. What exactly the order will be is a machlokas rishon. If you're interested, you can go to the art scroll, the third volume of Sanhedrin, the very last chapter. Sanhedrin is a parak called Parak Chelek. Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek Be'olam Habo, and there is where all these discussions take place. And there's a very thorough introduction that Art Skor wrote. It's like a 3 or 4 page introduction on the terms Mashiach, Olam Haba, what the order is. It's a machlokas in the Rishonim exactly. Is it going to be, there's going to be a war, then Mashiach, then we build the Beis HaMikdash, or is it going to be build the Beis HaMikdash?
I thought it was said like that either things could start to get better or things get so bad that Mashiach would have to come. So if that's the case, then how would it be that, you know, the temple could be rebuilt if things were so bad, and obviously we haven't solved this issue.
Yeah, if you go with that approach, then you know that would be taking, in other words, that those 2 days, there's a machlokas in the Gemara whether or not that's what's going to be, whether or not it's going to be we can hasten it because of our actions, mm-hmm. or it'll be a time period where that, even though it's so, we haven't done it, but there's just an end. It's going to happen anyway. So this would be what we need to do to bring it quicker. All right, let's start with this approach, this topic that he discusses, the concept of Hislamdus. The root of the word Hislamdus is from the word lamad, which means to learn. And this is the idea about learning about those things which surround us. So I want to start in the middle to introduce what he has to say on the very last line on the first page. Go to Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, and we'll start with this. Ben Zoyma Omer, Mishnah that we are all familiar with. Ezehu Chacham. And Zoma asks in Pirkei Avos, who is considered a Chacham? Halomein Mikol Odom. Who is wise? Person who is wise is a person who learns from everybody. Shenamar Mikol Milamdai is called, from all of my learnings I have become wise. And that is Ben Zoma's teaching. So he quotes from the Bar Tanur in the top of the left hand side. Halomein Mikol Odom. V'afal Pishu Hu Katan Mimenu. So the Bartzanur is stressing that the language of the Mishnah is Halomim Mikol Adam. Now, if you tell me that I need to learn from everybody, that means not just the people who are greater than I, the people who are my teachers, my Rebbe, and the people who I admire or look up to. The Mishnah is teaching me that if you want to be wise, you have to learn from everybody. Whether or not the person is greater or less than you, smaller, younger, it doesn't make a difference. Everybody has what to offer. Shekevon she'enu chas al kvodo, if a person is not makbid, he's not particular about his own kavod, his own honor, and he's willing to learn the lomed min haktanim, doesn't matter, I don't care what this person knows, he knows less than me, he's learned less than me, he's been in yeshiva less than me, or he's got a lower SAT score than me, but he's got something to offer me and I want to learn from him. Nikarim hadvarim shechachmasali l'shem shamayim, that makes it clear that really his desire is l'shem shamayim. For the sake of heaven, he wants to become wise, he wants to learn. V'lo lehis yoher ulehis poyer, not to be a baal gaivo or to become glorified through his knowledge. Person who wants to be, for his own personal sake, to become glorified through his knowledge, so then I'm not interested in learning from somebody lower than I, because that's almost degrading. Like, I have to learn this from you? It's not befitting me. But a person who doesn't have that, a person who's willing to take in anything from anybody, he wants to become wise. He just wants to have the knowledge, and it doesn't matter where it's coming from, it's something of value to him. That's his starting point. Now, what he gets into is the following idea from the Simcha Zissel from Kelm. One of the altars of Kelm. Starts off as follows. When we talk about learning from everyone, what does it take to learn from everybody? So we all know that a person who has an interest in a particular matter, when you're interested in a particular matter, you see it everywhere. If anyone's ever had the experience of buying a new car, so when you, have I said the example ever before?
No, we see that all the time in my house.
So when you're buying a new car, all that you see are cars. Cars everywhere. You notice colors, you notice make, models, you notice what's on there, because I'm looking to buy a car. So when you're in the market for a car, so you pay attention to what everybody's driving. And I remember when we were going through that, I could tell you like what percentage of the cars on the highway were this or that, and what colors were in, what colors were out. It's just, you see it everywhere. And then the moment you make your purchase and you're no longer interested in buying a car, I mean, I've been on the highway, I can't even tell you, I don't know anything anymore. It's just not of interest to me. When it's of interest, then you see it. You're locked into it. A tailor will see when he meets somebody, he'll see the suit that he's wearing, and he'll notice quality, is double-breasted, triple-breasted, single-breasted, what the styles are like, what the quality was like, what kind of fabric it is, because that's his profession, that's what he does. You notice those things, and if you sell shoes, you notice the guy's shoes, and I, who would look at the two of them, wouldn't know that neither of them interest me. But if you're looking to buy a pair of glasses, then you'll be holding in glasses. I had the experience where I bought a new pair of glasses, and so while I was in, I went through this, I noticed everybody's glasses, and I got my glasses, and then forgot about it. About 4 months later, a friend of mine got a pair of glasses, also a new pair of glasses. And I noticed, I don't know if I noticed because I was still relatively new with my own pair of glasses, but I noticed that he got a new pair of glasses. And I was about to say to him, "Oh, I see you got a new pair of glasses." And before I could open up my mouth, he says to me, "Oh, I see you have a new pair of glasses." I said to him, "I got my glasses 4 months ago, and I've seen you 100 times since then, and the first time that you noticed that I have new glasses is when he got new glasses." And it's such a classic response. That's exactly how it goes. He's holding in glasses, and all of a sudden now he notices that I have my new glasses. And that's how it goes. Whatever is of interest to you, that's what it is that you see and you notice and you lock in and you zero in on it. Now, the same is not only true in the physical world that we live in and that we notice those things. I'm dealing with a weed problem in my front yard, so I happen to notice all the houses up my block who also are dealing with weed. I would have never noticed that before.
Or in my case, not dealing with
it. Right, but I noticed that just this week because I'm dealing with it. Oh, you got a bigger problem than I have. But that's how it goes. So like, if you could ask me like whether or not, I was speaking with another friend of mine about this, you know, what the weather is like. So I have no idea. But the weather, I couldn't tell you if it has rained in the past week, if it hasn't rained in the past week, if it's supposed to, it's just not of interest to me. And I remember even this when I was discussing this, it was about a week or so ago, that I had said in the middle of the afternoon, it was like pouring in the kitchen. I said to my wife, "Wow, it's really raining." And she's like, "It's been raining for 4 days straight." So, oh, I'm like, whatever. I work in an office. I'm not, it's an inconvenience, a minor. And at, you know, at their table is somebody who works outside, the landscaper, so he can tell you the weather report, you know, exactly what it's done for the last month, and he knows what's supposed to happen. That's what he does. Now, it's certainly, we all know that this is true in the world of Gashmias, in the physical world that we live, the things that interest us, we pay attention to. But it's also true in the world of Ruchnias. The person who wants to work on himself or grow in a certain area will also notice that. If a person who's Mekabel on himself, you know, if until Shavuos, I want to work on Tefillah. That's what they decide. They'll notice in Shul, all of a sudden, all the people who are daveners, they'll notice, oh, look at that guy, he's really got it down. If that person comes on time, that person seems like he doesn't get distracted, all of a sudden I'll zone in on those people because that's what I want to work on. If I'm working on chesed, I'll notice the people who are doing chesed and the people who are learning and are masmidim and may keep their siddurim and they don't disturb themselves while they're... Whatever it is that I'm particularly interested in or working on, even in the world of ruchnius as well, are also the things that I will focus on, and I will notice the things that they're doing and then totally drop or not pay attention to the other things, because there's only so much that I could be interested in at any one time. And whatever my interests lie, that's where I will be focused. So this is the idea, as I mentioned outside, that he brings here from Rav Simcha Zissel from Kelm, that every person, Kol Adam, just starting from the top, I'm not going to read the whole thing as I spoke most of it outside, Kol Adam Sheyesh Lo Chush Be'ezeh Dover, person who has a feeling, an interest in a particular area, Yargish Ma'od Kishiyire Dover Ma Bizeha Inyan. We'll sense when he comes into contact with that. He brings an example, whether or not you're a tailor or a sandler, a person who works with shoes, a person with hats, whatever it is, you become interested in that particular issue. Kilibo, skipping down to the five lines down at the end of the line, Kilibo ein moser levakesh velachkor dvarim azeh, but the things that he's not interested in, it came in the middle of the sentence, his heart's not in it. When your heart's not interested in it, so if you have no interest, so then you totally disregard whatever it is. Similarly, in the service of Hashem, a person who's interested in Yira Shemayim, he wants to develop a sense of Yira. He wants to keep the halachas, that which is explained in Shulchan Aruch. So he will learn from his friend. This person, he keeps mitzvahs well. He's a medaktik, the mitzvahs, he's careful in what he does, and that's what I'm interested in. But if I'm not regular interested in it, that person also doesn't speak Lashon Hara. But I'm not interested in that. I never noticed that about him. So lo yargish b'maseis, I won't notice that. Skipping down to the dash at the end of three lines from the bottom. Kol zeh imhu eino hergish be'elef. He's not interested. He has no feeling in a particular area. Lo yovin lihislamin mizulah. So I will not learn from you because I'm not interested. And when I'm not interested, I don't notice it. Im Kain, and this is where he sums up this whole idea from this Mishnah. Halomed mikol adam. What does it mean? The Mishnah says you want to be wise, you want to be a chacham. What does it take to be a chacham? It means learning from everyone. Hareu soicher gadol. Then you are a tremendous merchant. Mischaro bakol mashallah. My mischar, my trade, that which I'm trying to purchase, to buy, and then to sell, to learn and to adapt to myself, is everywhere. It's in everything. Al kain yovin lehislamin mizuloh. So I'll be open to learning from everyone, because if I'm really interested in learning from everyone and I want to gain everything, I'm interested in everything. There's no area in which I say, nah, I won't pay attention, it's not of interest. I want to learn from everyone and from everything that's available out. V'lochein nikro chacham. Therefore, he is called a chacham. Kavonas marana harav simcha zislohi. What is the kavon of this paragraph? That hachayit mistakel rakal hachalifa shel hazulos. The tailor only notices the coat of his friend. Hasandla rakal hana olam. And the person who works with shoes, the cobbler, only notices the shoes. Teifer koivoim rakal hakoivishal. I only notice the guy's hat if I'm into buying or selling hats. Kain mistakel yore shamayim rakal diktuk hamitzvah shel zulos. So to a person who wants to work on his yirad will only notice the way that a person does mitzvahs. Ubal chesed rakal maisei chesed shel. A person who's interested in chesed notices his chesed. Aval halomen mikol adam mislamen mizuloso kol ma shenitein lumod. He learns from everything that he's able to learn. even on things gam dvorim shohoyu ad ko michut litchum his aninus shelo humav chenetzel chaveru velomet, even things which are otherwise outside of my interest, but if I'll open up my eyes and pay attention to the people and the things that are going on around me, I will see that everybody has something to offer me, and something which I, until this point, I didn't really think I'd been particularly interested in. I wasn't looking for it. But if you'll open up your eyes, you'll see that everybody has something and you could learn from it. Hare halome mi kol odom hu poseach la kol mashu hu roya ba olam lehislame mimenu. I'm open to everything that I see to be able to learn. Va'af anu nosef, will even add, lo rak mi bnei odom, who lo made gam kein snios mechatul. He brings there, if you learn, if you begin to live with this perspective, that I'm going to open up my eyes and I'm going to see what I can learn, it's not just human beings. The Gemara itself says, which is what he's quoting from here, the Gemara in Erevin says that if the Torah had not been given, we would have learned certain traits from the animal kingdom. We would have learned snios from the cat. We would have learned derech eretz from this animal. We would have learned something else from that animal. Then the Chazal saw that they all have what to teach us. And if you'd open up your eyes, you would see, even without the Torah, there are certain principles which you would have derived even from the animal kingdom. Hare Chazal hoyu mislamdim gidoilim. Chazal understood this principle, but he calls hislamdus, of being open and aware of that which is going on. And they, from the animal kingdom, you can pick up as well. Now,
I noticed my neighborhood, there's a lot of squirrels and birds around. So there's all different kinds of birds. There's the oriole, the raven, and there's the bluebird and all that stuff. So I noticed I started noticing like how each creature is some attend to themselves, some try to get the other to get to what they're getting at, and some I noticed one of the blue one, there was a tail to have, so it was like chasing the squirrel. So then I noticed that some chase others and that aren't their own species. It was pretty interesting how to look at it.
So what he wants to present is a person who lives their life with their eyes open, where they pick that up. Now, what he points out, one of the things that he writes in his introduction to this section, which we're doing here, which I'm not speaking out right now, is that one of the issues that a person who's an Oved, a person who's working on himself and growing in his Avodas Hashem, has to be concerned with, is what he calls is a certain gaiva. There's a certain haughtiness that a person, as you take on new behaviors, new hanhagas, you grow with a new mitzvah, it naturally happens that you begin to look at those around you as somehow less than you, because look at the things that I am now doing. When the first time that I took upon myself to come on time to Minyan, it's only the first time, one of the many times that I take it, because I do it and then I fall back and I got to do it again. Every time I do that, every time, I experience the same thing, where the first morning that I'm there on time, I look down on everybody who's late. Even though I was late for the previous 3 weeks, which inspired me to say, enough already, you're going to come on time. The first time you walk in early, and you're ready with your towels and tefillin before davening starts, I can't believe these people are walking in late. Where is their davening? What's their davening going to be like if you show up late? You've been doing that for 3 weeks straight. But now that I'm already, I used to have a Rebbe used to tell us a story that there was a bachar in Kelm, in the yeshiva, he was a mekabel, that he was going to do Shabbos early. He was going to be mekabel Shabbos early. That was his avoda. He wanted to start Shabbos. So Erev Shabbos, all the boys are doing what they do on an Erev Shabbos, and he had showered and went to the Beis Medrash 2 hours before Shabbos started, accepted upon himself Shabbos, and sat and learned until Shabbos. And he did it for a couple of weeks, and the altar told him and said he had to stop. Because he could see that what you're gaining in yourself by adding 2 hours to your Shabbos, you're losing because you're looking at everybody else as Mechalalei Shabbos. You're looking down at everybody else that they're not keeping Shabbos, because look at them running around to the cleaners on Erev Shabbos, they're playing ball, they're taking a shower, and they're totally fine. But for you, in your head, like that they're not doing what you're doing, that they're not already accepting Shabbos early, it's not worth it. You're losing more than what you're gaining. And this is true, we've all experienced this. Anytime we do something good, it's very easy to suddenly not believe that there are others who are not doing it. So as he begins this whole series in this part of the Sefer, in which he's saying it, and how you take on certain things, and you develop certain traits, the fear that you have, and the issue that you have to be most careful about, is gaiva. That you don't then lose what you're gaining, in that you're really supposed to be gaining between you and your relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that you don't begin to look down on those who are not doing the things that you're doing. he writes, the key to that is this idea here of Hislandus. If I come on time, not because I've inspired myself that I'm such a holy Jew, but I saw him doing it, and I said, you know, that's a great thing. I want to be like that. If when I adopt a new behavior, it's not because I'm the greatest person in the world, but because I saw someone else doing it, and I want to learn from him and be like that, that is a great way of avoiding your own feelings of gaiva, because you're really just trying to pick up and adapt from the other things that you've learned. If you learn that this person knows how to daven, this person is very careful in the way that he does mitzvahs, and this person never speaks lashon hara, and as you see it in others, you adopt it, or adapt it to your own life, being able to do so is one of the great factors in being able to avoid that as part of a person's own avoda, not falling trapped into that trap of being filled with a haughtiness. And this is the idea, this first idea that I want to, as a little chabura ourselves, develop, is this principle, being able to see the world around you and learn from certain things that go on. And as we get used to it and begin to work on it, my goal is, well, if you guys are into it, I tried this once before and it worked extremely well, is we'll pass it out and we're going to give me an email address, and everyone's sort of responsible for sharing one thing that they learned, that they saw from someone, and it creates a tremendous, it opens up, it's a very rich life when you're aware of those things. And when I was doing it, I started this a couple weeks ago also with some friends, and it's unbelievable how it just opens up. You just see all sorts of things, and the things that you're able to learn and pick up and adapt, and you keep almost a journal, even if you're not interested in sharing it with everybody else. But when you actually keep the journal of those things, you'd be amazed as the week goes by, the conversations that you have with people, people say the most inspiring things. And generally it just goes right over our head, and it's the end, and there's nothing there, and you don't take anything out of it, and there's no impact, and it's just lost. And very every once in a while, if you're paying attention and you're keeping a little journal, or you're sharing on a little email group, it's an amazing thing as you just see the things around you and what there is to learn and to grow. And that is a Pesach, he writes, which will begin for Kabbalah Satera, this living a life in which one is aware of their surroundings, aware of the things that are going on around them, has that impact. Let me read one more paragraph, and then we'll wrap up this idea. Odos Anu Mosivim, I'm in the second to last paragraph there, really the last full paragraph on the left hand side. Rabbi Oimer, Lama Nismucha Parshas Nazir Le Parshas Sota. Rashi quotes this Chazal from the Gemara in Sota, right after the Torah describes the halachas of Nazir, of Sota, excuse me. The next parsha in the Torah describes the parsha of Nazir, a person who takes a vow not to drink any wine and go through the other processes of a Nazir. So the Gemara says, Loim Raloch Shekol Haroya Sota Bilkilkula, someone who sees a Sota, woman in her degradation, Yazir Atzmo Min Hayayin. His reaction should be to take upon himself a Nazir so that he's not going to drink any wine. Hamislamid Yodea, someone who's into this mode, who looks around him, he sees people around him, he understands that there's what to learn, to gain, to grow from the things and thoughts and sights of those around him, knows Kikol Aver Shuhu Roya Eitzel Zulaso, a person sees that person did an Avera. But he knows Gamhu Atzmo Aluluhi Koshelba, it's not just him. I could fall prey to the same thing. There's nothing different that separates him from me. If he fell prey to that particular veir, it's related to me also. Sher bahu yetzahara, come I also have the yetzahara. Lachein b'ra'oso soto b'nivula, a person sees a soto in her degradation, eino misro'im al hamushchesis hazos. He doesn't exalt himself and say, bah, feh, look at what she did. Can't believe it. El miyad hu misboinein eich hi mahigil matzava ha'og. He instead, what must have happened that she got to such a state? Who maven ki bevadai schoik veholelus hayu veochra, understand that it was a certain laxity of levity, a lack of seriousness, shtias yain also saw shalah, certainly it could happen through drinking wine, umiyad hu mekavil al atzmo zehirus miyayin, shalo yosis gam oso loreda shachas. if that's what happened to her, I'm going to do something to make sure that it doesn't happen to me. And therefore, he takes upon himself an azirus from wine. Origami over averim is not even from an over avera. Someone who's violating averus. So a woman in this particular case who'd been warned not to be together with a certain man, and she doesn't anyway. Now she's going to become a sota. I went through the whole process. I'm going to learn from her also. I'm going to learn this is shayach to me. It could happen to me as well. And therefore, I'm going to take some steps to change something in my life to make sure that that doesn't happen. Most of us are very far removed from this. That most of the time when we see somebody do something wrong, first thing that we do is we brush it off and we say, can't believe that they would do such a thing like that. How disgusting, how despicable, what a disgrace. And never then connected to how does that affect my life. The example that he brought in the first half of the paragraph, which I skipped, he brings from the Parsha of Negoyim, of Tzaraas, which we just read a couple of weeks ago. And when you read the Rambam has 16 chapters in Hilchos Negoyim, which he describes all of the different halachas, the different types of Tzaraas you can get on your clothing, on your body, on your house, on your skin. And at the end of 16 chapters of discussing Hilchos Negoyim, the Rambam has a long essay in which he describes Lashon Hara, and why people speak Lashon Hara, and how horrible Lashon Hara is, and what you need to do to stop yourself from speaking Lashon Hara. And the Rambam is not known for giving Musar Shmuzin in the middle of his Yad HaChazaka. That's not what he set out to do when he wrote his sefer, which we refer to as the Rambam. And when he concludes these halachas, that's what he does. So Rav Ova points out, what the Rambam is teaching you is that when you're learning the halachas of Negoyim, really what you're studying is the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. You're learning Hilchos Lashon Hara. You have to see beyond that which is just on the surface. I just see the laws of Tzaraas. But Chazal are clear that the reason why we get Tzaraas is really at its core, at its root, is all about Lashon Hara. So as you're studying the laws of the splotch on a wall, whether or not it's this size or that size, whether or not it's expanding or contracting, if it's color, if it's red, if it's green, on the hair, on the body, if it's yellow, if it's white, but really what you're working on, don't get lost on that particular detail. What's really being studied here are the laws of Lashon Hara. What you're discussing is human behavior, in terms of this is just a result of improper behavior. But don't ever get confused as you're looking at X, what's really underneath X. And that, in order to be able to see that, takes this, says Rav Ova, this quality of Hishlamdus, that you're learning from the things that you're doing. You're not just doing it, and on the surface going through having conversations, having contacts, interactions with people, and whatever's on the surface is there. There's always something behind it. There's something to be learned. There's something deeper than that. And it's that idea of being a mislamed is really at the root, is underneath and underlying all of that. And I would like to issue a very simple challenge as we conclude for this, as we begin to take note of that, to be able to share and to recognize something that you learned from the people around you, be totally anonymous from whom you learned it from. Just to share an example of what I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I had a certain, there's a Rebbe here, Rabbi, who's has a class, and was making a wedding. And on the Friday before the Sunday or Monday wedding, was in the office photocopying something for a class that he was preparing for the substitute teacher for that Tuesday. I'm looking at him on Friday. His wedding was on Monday, and he was preparing the lesson plan for his substitute for Tuesday. And I guarantee you, on a Friday afternoon before an ofruf and a wedding on Monday, there are other things to do rather than photocopying and preparing a lesson plan for the following Tuesday. Let the substitute teacher figure it out on their own. Don't worry about it. And what it occurred to me is that I would have done that. I would have said, I have a great excuse. This is my class. Everybody would understand why I wasn't able to get this done. So I didn't get it done. And the lesson that I took from that is a approach of no excuses. I have something to do, I have responsibilities, and it doesn't matter that I have a great excuse, and that everybody would accept my excuse as a great excuse. I'm going to live my life with an approach of no excuses. I have responsibilities, I'm going to get it done, and I'm not going to let excuses stand in the way, even though they're valid. I took that out, and it was an inspiring moment for me to see. And that's the kind of thing, that stuff is all around us. I had a woman walk into my office, and in the course of a conversation, which was about something else, said, in 43 years of marriage, I've always wanted to be a better wife. And it never once occurred to me that leaving my job on time at 5 o'clock to get home would have such an impact on my marriage, And now I'm makbid to do that every week. I leave exactly on time, 5 o'clock to be home. And I took such a great statement. There's so much there. You know, 43 years, I've you know, the idea that I've been working on it for 43 years, I want to be better, that the solution was right in front of my nose the whole time, but I didn't realize what an impact that I would have, and now I'm changing my whole behavior to make sure that I'm home. There's a lot of stuff. You know, you take notes, and you could just sort of see there's stuff all around us, conversations, things that people say, but we're asleep to it, and it goes right by us, and we miss it. And the first step of living our lives richly, living our lives of creating that inner world, a world of pnimius, which will then infuse our external mitzvahs with meaning, is first getting in touch with our olam ha-pnimi. There is an inner world that can be awakened to the things that are going on around us and becoming alive, so to speak, as opposed to just sleepwalking through our days, becoming acutely aware of the things that are going on around us. So with your agreement, I would, if you're interested, yes, no. I would send that. I would create a. I don't have a piece of paper. You'll rip that up. But happy to share emails, and I would obligate everybody. I'll send out the first one so everyone has just a reply all. Obligate to share a thought of something that you. So you could. It could be anonymous as to what you saw. Who, if you want. If it's nothing bad, then you might want to add that. And as a group, you'll see how overly inspiring it is when you're over the course of your day. You get it's 6-7 emails. Of a short little vignette of something that you saw, that you noticed, could be from a person from the world around us, of what there is to learn to begin this process of developing that inner world that's aware and awake of the world around us. All right, we'll see how this homework assignment goes over the course of the week.